January 4, 2016. This is the Mideast Migraines program, the Monday edition on Free Radio Santa Cruz, coming at you on 101.3 FM and streaming live at freakradio.org. Yes, that is some fusion music, as I'm sure you... And that's the beginning of more fusion music. From the Putumayo Presents album, Arabic Beat. Let me see. Great number to start the show on. Diffusion of Algerian and German. Let's see, the artist is Jamel Laroussi. It's called Kifah Hilti. Arabic Beat presents more of the upbeat Middle Eastern and North African dance music that made the album Arabic Groove a global success. This is the Mideast Migraines program for Monday, January 4, 2016. Hippie, hippie New Year to everyone, whether you're listening or not. Once again, producing from my humble abode, since Free Radio Santa Cruz is still without its own studio space. So that's why the quality of the sound is somewhat lacking. I'm sure it's at least minimally obvious to people. I'm in my living room here, leaning way over so I can crank out the program into the internal microphone embedded somewhere in this keyboard. Those who are most familiar with my shows know that I tend to bury people with stuff about the situation in Palestine and Israel. I, by the way, am your friendly local neighborhood Palestinian American. My name is Ren Tawil. Born California born, my father is from Jerusalem. His family was Christian Arab. He happened to be out of the country when the newly found nation of Israel canceled his British authorized passport and would not allow him, my father, to return to his home and claim his property and basically what little wealth he did not have on his person at the time. So he settled down with a wonderful American woman in the San Francisco Bay Area and raised me and my three sisters. That's what that's about. So, as I was saying, you know that I generally comprise the hour and 55 minute program and my Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines every Saturday at 11 a.m. with stuff about Arabs and Jews, etc. But those who are familiar with the program know that I'm trying to branch out a little bit and talk about stuff that, quite frankly, most people can more readily relate to. Here I have in my hot little fingers is last October's, October 2015, edition of the Hightower Lowdown, Jim Hightower, wonderful progressive writer out of Texas, and his perennial, or at least monthly, newsletter. I like trains, folks. Who out there doesn't like trains, right? You just love standing next to the track, 3 feet away from the track, and letting a freight train roar by you. Well, maybe not that kind of liking of trains, but here in volume 17, number 10 of the Hightower Lowdown, Hightower is dedicating the entire issue to passenger train service, talking about how it has been sorely lacking for many decades. I mean, real serious passenger train service in the United States of A. Okay, let's just start with a quotation from Daniel Burnham, architect and urban designer. Quote, "Make no small plans. They have no magic to stir humanity's blood. Make big plans, aim high, remembering that a noble, logical plan, once recorded, will never die, but long after we are gone, will be a living thing." How does that tie into choo-choo trains? Opening headline, page one article. People with concrete for brains created today's transportation system, the word system in quotes. Travel that is fast and efficient. Even fun? Let's get on board with high-speed rail. Again, this is most likely written by Jay Hightower himself from the October 2015 edition of the Lowdown. People like trains. whether taking a long trip or making the daily commute. Riding the rails without the hassles of airports and the tensions of driving can be the most sensible and pleasurable way to get from here to there. Americans have been doing just that for 188 of the USA's 226 years. On horse-pulled rail carriages in the 1830s, then going west on the steam-shrouded, whistling and screaming iron horse of the 1870s, next riding the Zephyr and other sleek streamliners of the 1930s, and today taking the electric high-speed Acelas running on some of Amtrak's routes. More than just another mode of transportation, these versatile, still evolving forms of locomotion, I would say that's a pretty important part to emphasize. These still evolving forms of locomotion are powerful expressions of the American character, of our can-do spirit, sense of adventure, and yearning to go beyond where we are. And though the 19th century push to span the nation with rails came with huge human consequences, decimating native tribes and virtually enslaving many immigrant workers, the resulting system tied the country together and unified the economy, turning lemons into lemonade, in short. Continuing here, moreover, we absorb trains as an organic part of our culture, enriching our language, literature, and art. One place to find this special feeling for railroads is in America's songbook, which abounds with music animated by the highballing thrust and rhythm of trains, including songs like Orange Blossom Special, Wabash Cannonball, Rock Island Line, Fireball Mail, new one for me, and City of New Orleans. In contrast, you won't find many lilting peons, or is it pans, to the bumper-to-bumper traffic on the Interstate 5 in Los Angeles, the I-5, nor to the jam-packed Monday morning shuttles out of New York's LaGuardia Airport. But neither are we hearing many new upbeat tunes about traveling from city to city on today's rail passenger network. That's because our corporate and governmental masters of transportation have sidetracked what not so long ago was a world-leading cross-country train system and reduced it to an underfunded hodgepodge that is an insult to the traveling public and wholly inadequate for a nation with pretensions of greatness. Highway builders, auto lobbyists, and airline monopolists, people with concrete for brains and oil in their veins, have hijacked America's transportation policy. The highway builders, auto lobbyists, and airline monopolists. As a result, our mobility future has been clogged with their self-interest, blocking the efficient, reliable, enjoyable rail travel alternative. Reading from the Hightower Lowdown, October 2015 edition, written by Jim Hightower. And yes, you are listening to the Mideast Migraines program, which comes to you every Monday at 3 p.m. and Saturday at 11 a.m., two separate versions, on free here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Waiting on a Train, new subsection here. Change and a measure of transportation sanity will have to come from us outsiders. So this issue of the Lowdown is about American passenger trains, which means it's really about the abject failure of what we laughingly call, quote, the leaders of our country. More fundamentally, this issue is about how the corporate takeover of our democratic political process, elections and governance, has slammed the door on the people's needs and wants. In short, it's about the collapse of the common good in America and whether we'll reclaim it. A verse in a Jimmie Rodgers blue yodel from 1928 pretty well sums up where we rail travelers presently find ourselves. Quote, "All around the water tank, waiting for a train, 1,000 miles away from home, sleeping in the rain." Jimmie Rodgers' blue yodel. Like, is that like a blues yodel? 1928. Rogers was singing about the rambling, train-hopping vagabonds of his day, but it's the majority of Americans who are now waiting, stuck in traffic, and yearning for a train. Interestingly, the latest battle cry of neoconservative right-wingers is American exceptionalism, referring to a pathetic bit of quasi-religious myth, myth-making that... hyphen's missing there. Pathetic bit of quasi-religious myth-making that insists the USA is the biblical, quote, city on a hill, end quote. We are, they aver, blessed by God to be intrinsically superior to other nations, as, quote, proven by our vast industrial capacity, absence of class wars, according to Hightower here, glorification of individualism, and adherence to the holy doctrine of unfettered capitalism. It's like a Koch brothers fairy tale depicted by Disney. But exceptionalism is as exceptionalism does, and it takes way more than ideological fantasy to build a world-class comprehensive transportation system. Indeed, our God-blessed America has not even measured up to mediocrity in developing this essential piece of public infrastructure. Practically every wealthy nation today is making major investments in building high-speed rail, or HSR, networks to transport their people at speeds of 150 to 220 miles per hour. Japan, Canada, France, Russia, India, England, Morocco, Arabic country there, North Africa, Morocco, Korea, certainly South Korea anyway, Saudi Arabia, Italy, China, Mexico, Poland, Spain, Brazil, Germany, South Africa, Turkey, etc. They're all into HSR, high-speed rail. But not us, not the wealthiest nation, one with dozens of cities dotted across a continent with millions of people needing fast, convenient rail connection. Not our country. There's a graphic here, modest graphic. Even though every cent of our GDP, gross domestic product, relies on infrastructure, we spend less than 1% of it on infrastructure maintenance, placing us far behind other developed countries. The source of this is best MSWprograms.com/infrastructure. Australia, bounding upward with 2.4%, I guess. France with 1.5%, UK with 1.15%, and then the other two are so tiny I can barely make it out. US, 0.8%. The percentage of GDP spent on maintenance of infrastructure. He says here, do something. Despite attempts by conservative ideologues to kill the notion of a national passenger rail system, trains are only getting more popular. That includes in the United States, by the way, not just in these other countries like Mexico, China, and Poland. Amtrak ridership is continuously on a rise of popularity. I added that. Let's go back to the Hightower here. And why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they be? Imagine how our lives would be improved by having high-speed rail as a travel option. Parenthetically, how about traveling from Denver to Los Angeles in just over 6 hours without the hassle of airports? Really, is it that much slower? Far more enjoyable than flying. You feel a lot safer, a hell of a lot safer on a train than you do on an airplane. Continuing here. The U.S. High Speed Rail Association has a map of what a national rail system could look like. Check it out at www.ushsr, that's United States High Speed Rail. So, ushsr.com/USHSR map. Whether you're a seasoned rider or completely new to long-distance trains, you can learn more from the U.S. High-Speed Rail Association and the National Association of Railroad Passengers, of which I personally have been a member for many years. That's NARPRAIL, NARPRAIL.org, NARPRAIL.org, as opposed to USHSR.com, NARP, National Association of Railroad Passengers. Each group offers ways for you to get involved and learn more about the potential of passenger rail. And then a bunch of bullet points here. Bullet point. Never mind that HSR construction creates a startup economic boom. From the manufacturing of trains and equipment, construction of everything from bridges to stations, the installation of high-tech control systems, generation of renewable energy to power the electric engines, development of new businesses to serve rail passengers, and more, and would be a sustained source of good permanent jobs running and maintaining the network. Bullet point. Never mind that HSR is a boon for passengers, providing a competitive alternative to airline rip-offs and traffic congestion. Travelers get access to more cities, safer and more comfortable rides, and the ability to work or just relax on the road, as it were. Bullet point. Never mind that HSR trains are powered by electricity, thus substantially reducing consumption of grossly polluting fossil fuels. Here's some energy irony for you. Saudi Arabia is building its nationwide fast train system specifically because the royal regime wants to save oil. Come back. And bullet point, never mind that HSR crisscrossing America would be a monumental achievement by and for our people on a par with the 10-year moonshot effort launched by President Kennedy, or the interstate highway system initiated by President Eisenhower. It would be a history-making project worthy of a nation with unsurpassed wealth and underused talent. Creating such a treasure for future generations would re-engage our people's can-do spirit, and it just might rekindle some sense of national unity. Oh, one more. Never mind that the American people don't merely like passenger trains, they want them. Various polls over the past 20 years show that public support for greater funding and development of a passenger rail network between our cities ranges from a low of two-thirds approval, a low of two-thirds saying yay, to nearly 9 out of 10 of us saying yes to trains. Even more telling is the fact that ridership on both long-distance and commuter trains has steadily risen as auto travel has fallen. I'll read that again. More telling is the fact that ridership on both long-distance and commuter trains has steadily risen as auto travel has fallen, especially among young people, according to the stats, and as airlines deregulated and consolidated, permitting them to reduce service, abandon smaller cities, shrink knee room, raise prices, add fees, and generally make flying unpleasant. Not since the 1950s has rail transportation been so popular, with people now taking some 11 billion trips annually on mass transit. So if he's using the phrase mass transit, no doubt he's including other forms of intra-urban rail, such as streetcars and light rail and subways. I don't mind that he's doing that. Continuing here. Amtrak itself. What is Amtrak, by the way? Do we all understand what Amtrak is? As the nation's commercially controlled and commercially run, corporately run passenger train service dwindled in the first part of the last century, the 20th century, the 1900s, because of the invention and slow expansion of air travel, and of course, the ever-growing highway system and humongous popularity of the automobile. Passenger service found itself waning, slowly waning in popularity, and bit by bit, the corporate owners of the passenger service, who often included rail cars on the same trains linked up with freight trains, lumber, cattle, etc., found ways and excuses to diminish passenger service because they saw the trend and saw that they were losing money. So, understandably, Amtrak was the effort to for the government to step in, get out of sorry, I don't mean to blow on you there. For the government to step in and create the somewhat ubiquitous quasi-governmental and quasi-governmentally owned and controlled Amtrak passenger rail system. The formal name of the operation is the National Passenger Rail Corporation, or Amtrak for short, Amtrak. That's what Amtrak is, and that's what Amtrak has been struggling with, and very often coming up with shortage of funds from the stubborn government sources that Hightower just spelled out for us. Since 1971, Amtrak has been in the business in 71. It's undergone at least one major radical cutback in its nationwide network. At the behest of failed congressional funding. Okay, let me continue now with Hightower, Jim Hightower's articles in this edition of the Lowdown. Amtrak itself now has 32 million passengers a year, a 50% increase since the year 2000. That's phenomenal, especially since this passenger rail service is not really a national system, but a herky-jerky collection of often unconnected segments that transport customers by fits and starts. Look up Amtrak on the internet and look at their nationwide network, and you'll know what he means by a herky-jerky collection of often unconnected segments. And forget high speeds. Except for some Acela trains in the Northeast that can briefly top 150 mph, the average train proceeds at a turtlish 48 miles per hour. Still, that's pretty good compared to a lot of bumper-to-bumper commuter traffic at rush hour, 48 mph. What happened? Why are we stuck in traffic on highways and runways, left with a pokey, out-of-date rail system, while nations with a small fraction of our resources, like Morocco, Poland, and Turkey, are cruising on HSR networks? Again, HSR, high-speed rail. Why? Because our leaders sold us out to corporate hucksters who fed us a diet of sugar-coated lies and ideological junk food. Their fairy tale was that mass transit is creaky, inherently inefficient, and socialist. Oh, can't have that socialism business. And that freedom-cherishing Americans deserve the private thrill and personal independence that comes from a doctrine of one person, one car, one person per car. As early as the 1930s, giant corporate consortiums formed to buy out more than 100 of America's very effective networks of streetcars and interurban train systems. Giant consortiums formed to buy them out. America's very effective networks of streetcars and interurban train systems. not to run them, but to rip out the tracks and pave over the rail right-of-ways to make roads for cars and trucks. They even burned streetcars, as though they were witches. The biggest of these consortiums welded together the combined political and public relations power of General Motors, Standard Oil, Firestone, and Mack Trucks. Likewise, conniving corporate profiteers mounted a new offensive in the 1990s to undermine the higher speed potential of Amtrak's Acela trains, hiring such Koch brothers funded front groups as Cato Institute, Heritage Foundation, and Reason Foundation to spread hokey quote analyses that brand Amtrak as a slow train to collectivist hell. I like how this guy writes, Jim Hightower. He goes on. They also brought train loads. They get with it, Ren. They also bought with money train loads, as it were, of politicians who were still promoting the fabricated studies and talking points of the petrol cabal to wreck as much of Amtrak as they can and derail high-speed rail proposals. The executives of rail corporations, preferring the oligopolistic and very profitable freight business, play along. Their tactics include a smoothing passenger service with nostalgic sweet. I'll start again. Their tactics include smothering passenger service with nostalgic sweet nothings, such as, I love to travel by train, past tense loved, oozed a Southern Pacific exec back in 1976, setting the tone for this ongoing line of crap. He explained, but like a lot of other things, trains have served their purpose. It's just a new world. Wow, how's that for the old entrepreneurial, free enterprise, go get 'em attitude to make America great? Obviously, Hightower is poking at Trumpism here, even as far back ago as 3 full months ago. U.S. passenger service hasn't dwindled naturally. It's been systematically starved by a succession of no-can-do Congresses and presidents who've kept cutting funding, intentionally forcing, quote, slowdowns and reducing service. Remember what I said about the deliberate anti-progress of doing away with passenger service? You defund certain services and amenities, certain routes. People are not able to get to where they want to go as frequently with frequent trains because of the reduction in service. Therefore, train travel becomes less inviting, less popular, and they turn away and go to cars and airplanes, and that reduces the passenger service even more, which is cut down even more. That's what he's talking about here. Let me see, where was I? Slowing down, yeah. Slowdowns and reducing service. One egregious example is dubbed the, quote, Amtrak two-step, which regular passengers know well and fume about. Why does the Capital Limited from Chicago to DC, for instance, arrive late on 60% of its runs? Incompetence? No. The passenger service is routinely shuttled onto side tracks and forced to stop while oil, coal, and other freight haulers roll on by. You know, I was told quite some time ago that in Europe, by law, generally across that continent, passenger service is mandated to have preference over freight, over cargo hauling on rails. it is the freight trains which have to pull over and let the passengers roll on through, particularly with their comparatively high-speed trains. Now, I don't know if it's as simple as that, or if this is it's truly the case, or was the case, or is anymore, but we seem to have just the opposite here in the United States. I had a phone conversation with an Amtrak worker about this a few years ago, someone in Chicago when I was living in Minnesota, and she gave me this peculiar runaround saying, well, it's a lot more complicated than that. It depends on this and that. But in other words, it's just not law in the United States for passengers to be given preferential treatment over inanimate objects to be hauled on tracks. Okay. Chicago to D.C. arriving late 60% of its runs, not incompetence, but having to let the freight haulers roll on by. Oh, here we go. This is illegal. In America, this is illegal. Federal law clearly says, quote, Amtrak has preference over freight transportation in using a rail line, end quote. But the freight train giants feel free to thumb their noses at Amtrak passengers, routinely putting them, quote, in the hole, as dispatchers call it. That's because Congress has provided no funding to enforce this law. The law of giving passengers top rein, which they're supposed to have on the books. Continuing, today's train robbers, you see, are no longer on horseback. They're in Congress. Subsection, wreck of the old 188. On Tuesday, May 12th, at about 9:30 p.m., Amtrak's train number 188 was making good time in its run from Washington to New York. That would be Washington, D.C. to New York, one of the Acelas. Last May, the seven-car train was whistling along at 106 miles per hour as it approached the Franklin Junction rail yard in Philadelphia. But that was most unfortunate, for there's a sharp curve there with a speed limit of 50. It was going 106 with a speed limit of 50. The train hurtled off the tracks and broke apart in a catastrophic crash. All seven cars rolled over and were crumpled or mangled. Eight people were killed, and most of the 238 passengers and crew of five were injured. 243 individuals, close to that, were injured, and eight dead. Wreck of the old 188. We don't know yet why the experienced engineer took that familiar curve at such an impossible speed. But we do know one thing. Number 188 did not have an operating safety system called PTC, positive train control, that would have prevented this disaster. Why not? Because Congress has imposed both budgetary and ideological restrictions. Budgetary and ideological restrictions on the agency's ability to implement the system. You see, PTC operates through wireless radio frequencies on public airwaves, such as those that provide service to mobile phones. But rather than simply setting aside an exclusive frequency for this crucial safety technology, boneheaded, quote, free enterprise lawmakers decreed that Amtrak has to beg for frequencies from telecommunications corporations. Telecom giants have resisted leasing them the spectrum. So while train 188 was actually fitted with PTC equipment, it did not have the access to frequencies necessary to turn the safety system on. You are listening to the Mideast Migraines program on Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming online at freakradio.org, broadcasting to the city of Santa Cruz, California at 101.3 on the FM dial. using this half of the show to concentrate on the October 2015 edition, last October's edition of the Hightower Lowdown. Used to subscribe to this myself. Wonderful paper. 4 pages, and he has dedicated the entire thing here to trains. What's to become of America and its future with the passenger rail? Let's wind up this last of 4 pages here. In addition, while Congress has mandated that Amtrak implement the very expensive PTC, positive train control, Congress has mandated it, Republican leaders of Congress have blocked any of the extra funding needed to finance it. When a reporter asked House Speaker John Boehner if the failure to fund the system had anything to do with the deadly crash in Pennsylvania, he snapped, "That's a stupid question." Astonishingly, the morning after the derailment, even as rescuers were still searching for bodies, the GOP-controlled House Appropriations Committee coldly cut Amtrak's already bare-bones budget of $260 million. While in the Senate, Republican senators killed a proposal for a modest $251 million increase in Amtrak funding to get PTC operational as soon as possible. "It's absolutely stunning to me," said an exasperated Ed Rendell, Democratic senator from Pennsylvania. "It shows that ideology trumps reality. It shows that ideology trumps reality, and it shows that cowardice reigns in Washington," end quote. All aboard. Rendell nailed it in that one sentence. There is no economic, technological, geographic, budgetary, or conceptual barrier to our country having the best, most effective, state-of-the-art, high-speed rail service in the world. The reality is that the United States is in the caboose of transportation innovation only because special interest politics continue to thwart our national will, leaving you and me with a rickety, malfunctioning rail system that is a national embarrassment. It's unforgivable that corporate and political leaders have intentionally failed to maintain, much less improve, the quality of America's rail infrastructure for future generations. And the cowardice of Congress critters who take special interest money to oppose the best policies for the common good is not only shamefully corrupt, but it's a firing offense. A firing offense. Well, anyway, that's where we come in. High-speed rail offers such huge benefits for us that we need to push it to the center of our policy demands, especially with a national election cycle already upon us. Allies abound, and two major coalitions, NARP, National Association of Railroad Passengers, and U.S. High Speed Rail Association, are already organizing around specific proposals, yielding a wealth of detailed studies, good factual materials, and attention-grabbing graphic presentations. As the old adage puts it, politicians only see the light when they feel the heat. Politicians only see the light when they feel the heat.
I'll have to remember that one.
No, really. As I said, I am a member, an annually paying member in good standing of NARP. And they do have some excellent material. If you sign up with National Association of Railroad Passengers, at least get on their email list at no cost to you. Just Google NARP, N-A-R-P, Get on their mailing list. They have tons of really interesting stories and the very latest, not only of technical innovations and the promise of this route and that particular technology, but they have real-time stats, whether trains are on time or not at any given minute. Certainly Amtrak has that information. You have a phone number you can call. Amtrak does, and just call Amtrak's general phone number. I don't have it in front of me. Google Amtrak or get it from 411 telephone information, and you're given, of course, the robo menu, which includes, and I believe it's the very first item mentioned, to get current train schedule status or something to that effect. I don't know if the airlines have that system smoothed out as well as Amtrak does, but it just tons and tons of interesting and readable information on the whole subject of passenger rail in the United States. It's unfortunate that all this activity, that so much of it has to be dedicated to advocating for passenger service, apparently far more energy and stuff to do about advocating it than actually implementing it. And another graphic here. At more than 3,000 annual passenger kilometers per capita, that's about 1,864 miles, the Japanese travel more by rail each year than people in any other country. 3,000 annual passenger kilometers, about 1,864 miles. The early adoption of high-speed rail between Japanese cities made that possible. And one more section here. Riding the Shinkansen. What is that now? The electric bullet trains that run on the Shinkansen route from Tokyo to Osaka are a beaming source of national pride for the people of Japan. They provide superior comfort and amenities to more than 400,000 passengers per day. Not too far from 500,000 per day in the small country of Japan, smaller than the state of California. And we're struggling still, pulling our hair out in the teeth and nails of politicians and the public, trying to convince them that that California needs high-speed rail. Anyway, superior comfort and amenities in Japan, Tokyo to Osaka, more than 400,000 passengers a day, consistently delivering them on time. Okay, occasionally a few trains run late, but the average delayed arrival time is, warning, jaw-dropping statistic coming up, 6 seconds. Folks, 6 seconds late on average. In other words, that has to mean that some of these trains, a number of them, are actually at the terminus, the end of the line, before the scheduled stop time. I'm sure they figure that in. Safety, the Shinkansen, or perhaps that's Shinkansen, has operated for 50 years, carrying billions of people without one fatal crash. In addition, because so many people choose the train over driving a car, there are 1,800 fewer highway deaths per year in Japan, and serious auto injuries have been reduced by more than 10,000 a year. Those are just the serious ones. And, of course, with fewer cars and planes traveling between Tokyo and Osaka, less pollution spews into the air, reducing health problems and environmental damage. Again, this is called The Hightower Lowdown, written by Jim Hightower. And let me see, I know this, I have associated him with Texas, but apparently the base of operations is Langhorne, Pennsylvania. The Hightower Lowdown says, you can comment on stories in the Lowdown on our website, HightowerLowdown.org. HightowerLowdown.org.